Welcome to the Mums King Matter podcast, where we explore the multifaceted experiences of women and mothers and why it's vital to truly look after ourselves. As mothers, we are doing one of the most important and challenging jobs, raising the next generation. I'm your host, Lucy. I'm the birth recovery coach, coach for mums, perinatal specialist personal trainer, yoga teacher, and matrescence coach, working with women to make sense of their motherhood experience. It is my desire to help mums like you step into your power and rise as the change makers that we are. Just because society doesn't acknowledge the value of what mothers do, it doesn't mean we can't value ourselves. In my spare time, I love hanging out with my beautiful daughter, reading and writing poetry, long walks in nature, and a good soul-nourishing dance. Today on the podcast, I have Angela Seller, and I'm so delighted to talk to Angela. We've known each other for a few years, and I have genuinely, she's changed my life in the way that I look at clothes and makeup, and I'm so grateful. So to begin with, welcome, Angela.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you for coming onto the podcast. So I'll start with my question. Tell us a bit about you as a woman and mother, where you're based, your passions, and anything else you want to share.
Oh, right. Well, I've got terrible working memory, so you might have to break that question down a bit.
Sure.
So me, I'm based now in West Sussex, but I grew up in London, grew up in the south, in southeast London, southeast with a W, and then, which comes out much more when I'm tired or I've had one too many wines. I haven't had the wine, but I'm a bit tired this morning, so you might get a bit of southeast London. But now I'm in West Sussex near Arundel, so which is gorgeous. Made a move to the country with my family about a year and a half ago. Was in Hove, Brighton since my early 20s, Brighton and Hove, and then moved out to country. I'm 43. I don't mind telling my age. Some people are so funny about it. But I'm 43. I am also a late diagnosed ADHD woman. I got a diagnosis a couple of years ago now. Was it 21? So nearly 3 years ago. So there's been quite a lot of stuff going on with that over the last 3 years. I'm sure we want to talk about that. But that's obviously quite a big part of life when you realise what's going on.
Yeah, totally.
And what was the other part of the question?
Where you're based, your passions.
My passions.
Yeah.
So my passions are
As a woman and mother.
As a woman and mother. So creative passions have always been a huge thing for me. So I know that you're going to ask me why I do what I do, or how did I get to this? And I when I was thinking about it, I thought, I've literally got creativity and colour, like it's like running through my blood. Like I just can't, if I'm not creating or feeling or touching something that's creating or creative, life doesn't feel like life. You know, I realized this the other day when I was going around this beautiful haberdashery shop in London. I was in London for a few days, and McCulloch and Wallace, and it's, I remember going there as in my 20s when I was at London College of Fashion. I studied at London College of Fashion, I used to go around there, and it just had everything, and I was just like on fire with excitement. It had suede trim and just every trim and like feather, and I was just so just like buzzing with sort of excitement and creativity. And I think it's something that because I was also very academic at school, it's something that, I don't know if it was the 80s or just my life, or it's a theme that maybe other women can identify with, but I feel like the creative in me was downplayed to focus on the one that's good at finance and the one that's, you know, good at all the things that make you money, especially in the 80s, you know, was it the Thatcher era. You know, you've got to go and get a really good job and make loads of money. That was all it was about. So yeah, I definitely think that that's a bit of a theme in my kind of early life, my early career anyway.
Yeah. Oh wow, thank you for sharing all of that. I fucking love hearing about, well, and also just seeing, like, because obviously the listeners can't see, but we're on a call and I can see you, and seeing your passion come through. And also I think, in case it's nice to know, like, your words almost help me make more sense of me and who I am, because yeah, creativity is a huge part of my life. So yeah, and I know you're so talented at what you do. Like, I've loved the way you see, like, that something does suit me or doesn't suit me, or what about this instead? Like, I can almost feel like, if only I could see the way you see the world, because it just sounds so gorgeous. Yeah. And yeah.
And what's funny is, I also downplay my talents within myself. And I think this is a common theme with women. Because I assume everyone can see the same thing as me. And I assume everyone that it's, you know, that it's not that big a thing, you know. And I think, again, we are conditioned to behave like that. Whereas if it was a man that had these talents that everyone's saying are so amazing, they'd be, you know, on a fucking pedestal and, you know, lauded for it. And we're like, just trying to downplay it, you know, just trying to sort of, you know, it's not really, I'm not really that special, you know. Yeah. Not really. It's just, you know, it's only a little bit of it. So, you know, I'm certainly not there anymore, but I you know, have lived in that space for 4 years, you know. So yes.
And actually, can I ask how, and I know a bit about this because I know you, and also I have friends who've had similar, and I sometimes ponder whether I have ADHD, but can you tell us how being diagnosed sort of has impacted you? Go into as much or as little detail as you'd like.
Yeah, so it kind of came out of nowhere, which is funny because it's so crystal clear now, of course. But me and my husband were worried about our son, because we'd had a daughter. So I have a 9-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old son, so, which I haven't mentioned. So you asked about me and my woman, and that's, I'm on, right, on a mother podcast. But yes, no, it's, I have, okay, a 9-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old son. With my son, he was just very different to my daughter, of course, having had a girl first. And they are such, you know, I think, kind of commonly, they're completely different to raise, but also, you know, in their individuals anyway. But he was just, you know, quite hyper. And we were talking to someone and sort of said, you know, we're a bit worried he might have ADHD, you know, the classic hyper bouncing off the walls boy. And they said to me, it was someone who had ADHD themselves, and they were also a therapist, and said, Angela, have you considered you might have ADHD? Because a lot of the things that we've been talking about are symptomatic of ADHD. And I was like, what? Like, literally, you know. Never considered. No, of course not. But the moment she said it, you know, I'm not someone that is embarrassed or worried about a label, or, you know, I'm very open to self-discovery and development, for sure. I've been craving it, you know, I've been trying to do it all my life, and now we know why, to try and work out, you know, why can't I do this? Why this, that, and the other? So the moment she said it, I obviously started Googling, went down an ADHD, you know, hyper-focused rabbit hole, classic, and looked it all up and printed off. There's the diagnostic form that's pages long that basically the person does with you to assess you. I print off, go through all my set, and it was like, I mean, it could have been written for me. You know, so it took someone to kind of say that. And then I was under a psychiatrist at the time, because I had had, and this is something we can come on to, we're kind of bouncing all over the place, but this is me.
It's fine. No, it's great.
I'm all over the place and complete chaos. So I was under a psychiatrist at the time because I had had what I now understand to be an ADHD burnout, but thought was a breakdown at the time. And this was in... in sort of June 21, and definitely sort of set off by the challenges of COVID and being at home with two young children that I was, you know, one I was supposed to be trying to educate, the other was, you know, obviously two, and just zooming around, and it was just my nervous system just couldn't cope with it, basically living on the edge of coping anyway because of ADHD. So anyway, I was under the psychiatrist and we got somewhere, but I said, there's still something like niggling, and I really feel something else going on here, and this is, you know, someone mentioned ADHD, I've done all this research, could I get an ADHD assessment. Luckily, I had Bupa. My husband had Bupa, so I was able to ask, and they, she said, "Yeah, yes, okay, I can do that." And obviously, did it, and I just ticked all boxes. And so that was that. And I got the diagnosis, and I did then start trying medication, and I've been through a few different medications now, but I'm settled on one. Which I also appreciate very much, is an extremely rare and lucky position to be in, because most of the people that are in my position are probably still on a waiting list, which is disgusting. You know, waiting list, you know, 2 to 5 years for an NHS assessment, let alone titration or medication. And knowing how rock bottom and, you know, devastating it became for me, it's something that I'm quite passionate about. If I could help, I would, but you know, I think if you can realize that that might be the issue and get going now, it will be you may have a long wait, it could be that you do that 5 years before I was able to, and get into a, you know, a cycle of burnout, which is just so hard to come back from. And I literally have only really just about pulled myself back from it nearly 3 years later, which is pretty scary as well.
Thank you for sharing all of that. So I'm sure it's so, so helpful for so many to hear, however much or little they may relate. But I also feel like asking, how did you, I don't know if adjust to motherhood is my question, but how did you find becoming a mum?
This is what we really should be talking about, isn't it? I was thinking about this, and I'm someone, because now I realise, because of my ADHD, I'm someone that has to do a lot of preparation and a lot of research to feel like I'm in control, because basically I have never really been in, I've always been living on the edge of survival, in sort of a state of hyper arousal, because that's the way my ADHD brain, you know, works. And that's all well and good when all you're managing is yourself. And, you know, as hard as it is, and I've had burnout phases throughout my life before I became a mother at 34, but never quite so, like, terrible. Never quite so, you know, so hard. And like I say, when it's just you and you've got no dependents, you know, you can change job or you can do this or whatever. So I'd done a lot of research. I knew that sleep was really important to me, and that if I didn't get enough sleep, I wouldn't be able to cope. And a tired ADHD brain, I now understand, is much worse symptomatic. So sleep for me is obviously a way of cope, you know, is an important way for me to be able to cope with my ADHD symptoms as well. Now it all, you know, obviously makes more sense. So I was well aware that I wanted to make sure I got my child to sleep in a routine and eat in a routine, and the two I found were very linked, so that I could try to function in a way that was, I was going to be able to be the best I could. So I'd read all the books, of course, you know. You know, it doesn't work like that. But I did manage to get her into a feed and sleep pattern, to the point where other people were like, "Oh my God, she's the perfect baby," blah blah blah. But the bottom line was, I still really struggled. So for me, like, I remember it was like a bomb going off. It really was like a bomb going off. And you know, I'm going to say the classic, not because I don't love my children, you know, like when we feel like we say, you know. It was really hard, but I still love them. But I really love them, you know. Of course, I love them, and I don't think there's much need to, you know, say that. Yeah. But I hear it all the time, you know, when people complain or say something's hard. But yeah, it was like a bomb going off in my nervous system, basically. And I remember I remember bringing her home from hospital and having her in like the Moses basket beside me, falling asleep, and waking up to this weird noise, which was her. And I was like, oh, you know, it was literally like weird, you know, just, I wasn't my body was like, my nervous system wasn't ready. And I don't know if that's common or not, but I didn't get that overwhelming, like, love feeling of, oh my God. And, you know, look, I didn't get that. So I didn't, that, you know, I didn't get your classic, you know, you'll look at that baby and you'll never experience love like it. I didn't get that, which I called for, you know.
Yes.
Actually.
Yes.
So actually, it was hard. It was fucking hard. And that, you know, unfortunately, is my experience and memory of, of early motherhood. It was easier when I got her into sort of a sleep and feed pattern, which I did manage to do quite early. But I do realise that my ADHD symptoms were way worse. And what I thought a few years later was postnatal depression, because the only thing that's sort of out there that you could work out what was wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
6 months I wasn't right at all. At least 6 months, but it took me a couple of years to even look back and think, what was going on there? What, you know, nobody picked up on anything. So I rationalised it as, oh, okay, was it postnatal anxiety? Because it was much more anxiety for me. It was worried about everything. I remember keeping a feeding diary, like every feed and how long, and, you know, like absolute, like hyper-focused to try and make this easier. That was what it was. I realised, you know. But yeah, so taking away other kind of coping mechanisms and having that lack of sleep and having another thing, you know, that you've got to keep alive, which is, you know, 50 to 100 things you have to do, like, constantly, you know, was too much. Was too much for my nervous. It wasn't. I survived. I coped. But I looked back and realised, you know, if I'd have known, I would have got support in, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And then you assume everybody's going through the same thing, of course, because you don't realise that you're different, maybe, or, you know, your way of coping. So you feel like, then I felt like I felt bad for not being able to, you know, why am I struggling so much? What's wrong with me? You know, blah, blah, blah. Of course, I had no idea what was wrong with me. So I think it's probably was the ADHD symptoms coming out because of that, you know, shot in the nervous system, probably, rather than postnatal depression or anxiety.
Fuck me. This is just so
depressing, isn't it?
No, not at all. Please don't apologise. No, but honestly, I'm just like, whoa, different pennies are dropping. It's fascinating. I'm so grateful for you being so honest and sharing all that you have and are, because, it's just really insightful. And I don't think there's enough known about ADHD in women and
there isn't, because they don't do any research on women, because our cycles disrupt their research, basically disrupt their results. Isn't that hilarious?
It's fucking ridiculous.
That's the whole fucking point, isn't it? Right? We see how our, but no, that hasn't been done. So all the medication's been trialed on men, which is why most women. So I realised my first lot of medication, probably the initial dose was too high, but I didn't realise that. So I went up and up and up trying to make it better, and ended up completely in a state and just stopped my medication.
Right.
But because it's not trialed on women, they actually have no idea how a woman's body's going to respond to it. And a lot of ADHD women report that their medication doesn't work at all, or is much less effective the week before their period because of our change in estrogen. And obviously estrogen massively affects how dopamine and, you know, your neurotransmitters behave.
Wow. But
of course it's not being tested, so it's only anecdotal, and you get sort of, oh no, you know. So it's just that's a whole nother podcast.
It is. Well, please come back for more if you'd like to. But and also there isn't enough research or support of a motherhood, early motherhood and a new mum's experience. So to combine the two, talking about ADHD and a postnatal experience is just fucking huge. Yeah. A little bit, I was going to say a little bit back to the topic, but it's all fucking brilliant and relevant. So yeah, anyway, my next question is, what led you to what you do today and what's your big why?
Okay, so what I do today is work with women on their confidence. That's how I would explain it, really. And for me, it's about self-image, number one, because I think that generally is where our confidence lacks is in our self-image. And people come to me because they want to look and feel better, but what they don't realize is that actually it's the work on their self-confidence, on their self-image, that will really help their confidence. And what I do is like the cherry on top, you know, that's the icing, and then it's just the cherry on top. But that cherry on top does make a huge difference.
Yeah.
And just coming for help and saying, I do want to look and feel better, actually in itself is a huge step in, you know, in changing the way that you see yourself and how you, how you feel.
Yeah.
So the why I do that, you'll have to backtrack a bit, but yeah, when I was, when I was a kid, I used to play with my mum's makeup. She had a makeup drawer. She was a girl of the 60s. So she had false eyelashes and a whole drawer full of makeup. And I, on a Sunday, remember going, Mum, can I play with makeup? And she'd be like, yes, as long as you look after it. And so I'd try and do makeup on my big sisters, which got a bit bored of it in the end. And then I would just do it on myself for fun. And I always loved drawing and painting. So I was just, you know, really loved art. And for me, it was just another kind of medium and way to play with colour and with shape and that sort of thing. And then as I went through school and was quite academic and did really well, I chose academic A-levels. I did art. I did choose art and I got an A. But then I chose French and chemistry as well, which is a bit random. And decided that the only place I wanted to go was to the London College of Fashion to study. Well, actually, I wanted to be a designer, interestingly. So there's phases of where I had to deny my, where not had to, but where I denied my passions and chose something else because I felt that was the choice I should make. I was conditioned to make.
Yeah.
Not ever told to make by my parents, but it was definitely like conditioning. Definitely expectation that if you're bright, you don't choose to be an artist. Yeah. You know, if you're bright, you don't do anything creative because you're wasting your potential.
It's a waste. Yeah.
But what people don't think about or don't realise is I feel really passionate about, certainly for my children as well, is that it has to be about your passion and something that you're going to really enjoy and make you happy, because everybody knows that if you do those things, you're going to succeed way better than if you choose a job that you have no passion for just because it's like pays you huge amounts of money. And I think most of us that have transitioned from something more traditional to our passion realize that, but it's hard to explain that to people who are like, no, you need to go to school and do really well and then get a really well paid job. And this is okay, but you know what happens when you have a breakdown because you don't want to go into work anymore, you know, kind of thing. So when it came to A-levels, I did my A-levels. I wanted to go to London College of Fashion, the only place I applied to. I did consider Oxbridge, actually. I did think, oh, do I want to go to Oxford? You know, and they were like pushing me to try and, you should try. And I thought, I don't want to do anything there. Like, I'm not interested. Like, I just couldn't see myself doing something just for the sake of it. So I literally only put that down on the College of Fashion and Fashion Management. I chose Business Management rather than Design because that was the first time I said, I'm not good enough for that. So, that was the first, so I was too scared about the competition in designing and that, so I remember having this conversation in my head going, but there's so much competition to be a designer and make it. You're not going to, I think you'd be better off, because I was intelligent and academic and business minded as well, to do business management and then go into buying and that sort of side of things. So that's what I did. I applied for that and I got in. So, and there was like, there's like 5,000 applicants for like 50 places or something on these courses. Well, there certainly was in those days. So, so that was like a major thing for me. But then again, I got the whole oh, it was a Mickey Mouse degree. You know, I got a first, but people are, oh, yeah, but it's not a real degree, is it? And I'm like, really? Yeah, he's actually an economics teacher from the London School of Economics. And, you know, I remember thinking, I feel like at every point where I made a choice that was creative, I had to prove that I wasn't a bimbo, you know, which again is fucking terrible. But there was always an assumption was that you took the easy route or that it was the easy degree or whatever. Only two of us got a first. So it just shows you that, you know, it wasn't. But anyway, I loved it. I really enjoyed my degree. It was brilliant. And I went straight into a job at Arcadia buying, you know, obviously low rung of buying. And that was brilliant fun, right in Oxford Circus. But I realised very quickly that not only did you not get where you wanted to be from hard work alone, you had to do your time basically and pay your dues. And I thought, well, that's shit, because I've just not how my brain works. Like, I work really fucking hard. I'm really good. I'm really bright. I want to get the next stage up, but that just wasn't how it works. And my buyer, who was my, you know, third one up, was absolutely horrendous. I remember she was like 40, she was kind of a 40-year-old, which now obviously to me is like not old, but at the time I was, you know, 21, straight out of university, 40-year-old, always drunk, like overly drunk in the corner. Whenever we went out somewhere, she'd be the embarrassing one, like absolutely wasted. She traveled all the time too, although I can identify with that, but you know, not at the time. She was like a sad, old, like bitter, lonely woman, travelled all the time for work, like everywhere. It was amazing. But of course, she was never travelling with anyone that, you know, she was travelling with colleagues and she was never meeting anyone. She was working all the time and she was lonely and bitter and not very nice. Like, I remember her snapping at me several times for, now looking back with ADHD, RSD is a massive thing for me. So rejection sensitivity dysphoria, RSD. So any rejection or any being put down, like some people just like, you know, water off a duck's back. But for me, it's so painful. Yeah. And again, this is something I never understood until I had got my diagnosis as to why I take things so personally. And people are like, oh, come on, it's just a joke. And I'm like, no, it fucking hurts me, you know, and they don't understand because it, you know, it isn't neurotypical, you know, it is literally like someone's got a knife and hurt you. When so seemingly insignificant, or that would just wash off other people's back. So I couldn't cope very well with the not very nice people, and I thought, I'm not going to be you when I'm 40. I don't. I literally remember looking at her and thinking, I can't be you when I'm 40. I need to get out of here, and I'm not going to get where I want to get quick enough. So I was only there for 2 or 3 years, and thought. I think I even remember speaking to one of the directors who was lovely, Wesley, and him explaining it to me, like, you know, and I was like, yeah, fuck this shit off. Like what I thought, you know, what I thought was happening, I had explained nicely by someone I liked and respected and thought, yeah, no, that ain't gonna work for me.
No, so it couldn't be you.
I remember looking up, like, thinking, what do I want to do? I want to work more for a creative consultancy. I want to do something more, you know, for more for creative businesses and work, because fashion isn't for me. You know, it's bullshit anyway. And don't get me wrong, what I do is working with people on, you know, fashion and actually it's more on style and more on colour and more about them as a person and bringing that out. Because in fact, I find fashion, bullshit. So it's someone at somewhere, trend forecasters telling you what colours you're going to wear this season, what shapes it's going to be, this, that, and that. Why? Yeah. And then, you know, then you're buying it. Then you're buying it in and putting it in the shops, and then that's all people can get. It just seems so bonkers. And actually, I stopped reading magazines. I stopped reading fashion magazines, actually, after I left that job, because I just thought, this is such utter bullshit. I can't bear it. And still feel that way, actually. But I use it how I want to. No, I'll explain. So I worked for 10 years on TV and advertising. So mainly TV adverts, but I did also work for Sky on some of their series. I did Rihanna's Styled to Rock, which were only did one series, but worked with Rihanna and a big team on that, as the head of makeup, running a team on that, which was cool. I got given a budget and loads of makeup, and I had to get everybody in and do that. It's like one of my first jobs as well. But I would never have been able to do that if I hadn't had the experiences I'd have had before. If I was the, like, 19-year-old girl, A, I'm not going to be offered it, probably, and B, I wouldn't have known how to do that. So, you know, like, I feel like everything kind of happened to get me onto, you know. But then when, I probably can pause there and stop talking.
That's all right. It's all brilliant to hear. Yeah. Gosh, yeah, cool.
So, yeah, it was the question, what would you do if there weren't any boundaries, basically? Yeah. And I was like, become a makeup artist, and I did. And I worked 10 years in TV and advertising and loved every minute of it. Absolutely adore working on commercials. You get treated well, you get paid well. It's just so much fun. Then something's out on the telly really fast. That was the other thing. I need that immediate satisfaction for my dopamine brain. I couldn't work on films because it's too long. To come out, I wouldn't get enough kind of satisfaction.
Wonderful. Remember. And it's clear how you help women in what you've said. And I think it may be helpful to say how, like I said it earlier, but I love how much you helped me. And I think I'm just going to share that quote that I shared with you. Do you remember I texted you a quote from a book I was listening to? And because I think it would be helpful, because I think, and you've sort of hinted at this, like, people can sometimes think that, like, a certain career, creative career, is, like, not really very valuable, doesn't do much. But fuck me, that is so not true. And this is from Regina Thomas Howe from her book called Pussy, A Reclamation, which is just fucking brilliant. She says, just as an altar in a sanctuary requires upkeep and maintenance to feel sacred, so does the body of a woman. Attending to her clothing, her hair, and her dress is not frivolous or indulgent or irresponsible. It is our sacred responsibility to look and feel as beautiful as possible so we can connect to the sacred within ourselves, to shine our radiance on the world.
Love it. Yeah.
It's brilliant, isn't it? Yeah.
When my children got sort of old enough that they knew what was going on, what started to happen was that they weren't sleeping so well, and that because a commercial day I'd leave the house at 5:30 and be back at 9:30, 10. And so that, and when I got a couple of big commercials that were 2 weeks, I did a massive JD Sports Christmas commercial for TV and for in-store graphics and stuff. I was 2 weeks basically where they didn't see me apart from on the weekend, and it really caused havoc with the family. And I realised that this kind of work wasn't working for me anymore. But also I did, you know, there was that sort of what happened when I was in fashion. It was like, I'm selling a product here. I'm selling something here. Part of my role is to sell something here that actually isn't going to give women what they need. You know, it isn't going to help women feel better. It's just the multi-billion pound industry of selling products to people that, you know, isn't going to do the job. And what I realized was, actually, I felt that women could benefit from my experience, my knowledge and my tips directly in a way that, I mean, when do you ever get taught? When we don't get taught given advice on, unless you know, maybe on your wedding day, we don't get taught how to do your makeup in a way now, because most of us do it the same since we were 16, now that's going to really compliment you. Also, our hair colour changes, everything changes. And also, you know, looking at the colours that you wear and how that makes you feel and how it lights you up, makes you feel look dull. Nobody teaches that either. And you can't get it. You can't get it even from magazines, because it's also individual. Yeah. And also, the magazines are also just trying to sell you what's, you know, what the designers have come up with. I felt like, you know, I could offer a service here that is a personal service, but from someone that has huge experience, not your typical like wedding makeup artist around the corner that, you know, a lot of people have had a bad experience with, you know, someone's been done up at a counter and it's like they feel like a drag queen.
Oh yeah, that's exactly my experience.
Yeah, oh no, yeah. I can't have a makeup artist. They'll make me look like that again, or they'll give me a mask. And they'll make, you know, the amount of people that have like had the makeup done and it feels like a mask. And of course, that doesn't give you confidence. That makes you feel way less confident and really insecure and like you stick out like a sore thumb. So yeah, so that's what I started doing. And I realised, and you helped me realise too, that, you know, that it isn't just what everybody sees or has, you know, that actually I can say, so I think one of my first questions to you was, what colours do you, you know, what do you wear in the summer? Because I think you said that your winter clothes were a bit dull and you didn't really like them. And I said, well, what do you wear in the summer? And you showed me some beautiful clothes, like a beautiful bright yellow dress, I think. And like something bright coral. And I was like, well, that's what we need to be getting on you, you know, all the time. Like, you know, what do you, how do you feel in that? And you were like, oh, great, you know. But well, why do you have to wear grey and black in the winter? I actually hardly wear black at all now because it doesn't make me feel anything. I realised I feel colours. I don't just see colours. I really feel colour. And I think, you know, you, I think you said that when we got you in more bright colours and stuff, you, you know, started to really feel quite different as well.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly part of how it changed my life, because I felt so different and so lit up and so, zesty, I think, is the word you latched onto.
And of course, not everyone will want to wear bright colours, and but equally, I think so many people are scared of wearing colours that would make them look fabulous because they're scared of sticking out. They don't want to be seen sometimes. Because we've been so conditioned to be invisible, to be quiet, to be, you know, not rock the boat. So wearing colour is like, no, I'm going to fucking take up space. Yes, I'm going to wear bright yellow, you know, and like I still get it now. I'll wear a bright dress. I wore a bright dress to the pub for lunch the other day. And my husband was, you know, in jeans and T-shirt. I said, do you like my dress? He was like, might be a bit much for the pub. And I thought, no, it's not too much for the pub. I love it. I went, oh, well, I like it. I don't care.
Wicked.
You know, a bit much for who? It's a fucking dress in a bright colour. Like, what is your problem? Like, I just don't get it. You know, believe me, I've been, and the other thing is I've been there, you know, when I had, when I was, when I had the children, I realised my clothes have become all completely functional. And I'd lost the, you know, girl that used to go to the, you know, West London charity shops and find really cool, like bright, I had a bright green suit from Jigsaw in the 90s that I loved and wore all the time. And, you know, I had lost that. And a classic term I came up with was beige washed. I'd beige washed myself.
Yeah.
It wasn't all beige, but just dull and functional and just, you know, you can rip it off, put it in the washing machine, stick it back on again, which is all fine. And of course, we have phases, but it's like, hang on a minute, there's small things I can do actually that can make me, that can get me right out of that rut, that can make me feel so much better about myself, about how I look, you know, look and feel. And I did myself a, you know, a makeover as well, my, you know, my, with my makeup, and realised, you know, things weren't sitting quite right anymore. I wasn't getting what I wanted from the same makeup I'd been doing.
Totally.
In my 20s. And, you know, what I needed to do was place it slightly differently. And I think that's the thing that you cannot learn from YouTube videos, which people go, oh, I can learn that from, because their face isn't your face, and you need someone to be able to see where all your contours are, to be able to say, look, if you put this here, and often it's a little bit higher when our eyes become you know, a little bit more hooded, as they often do when we're older, but yeah, so it's about knowing how to and where to put things just for subtle differences. Also, I think people generally wear far too much makeup as well, like use so much more product than they need to. And nobody's going to say to you on the counter, you need to have a quarter of that.
Oh, it's interesting you say that, because I feel that, but I am not coming from a place of experience. So to hear you say that you feel like women or people wear too much makeup, that's, yeah, that's really interesting. And probably, I think, another podcast episode in itself, because it is obviously very nuanced, very sort of multifaceted with the different things that we're not taught, as you say. So it takes, what I found is it takes of course it takes sort of advocacy for self and ownership of like, I want to look better, I want to feel better. Feeling better means more confident, means more sexy, means more sassy, whatever. It doesn't matter. And you are allowed to take up space. And actually, you reminding me of the yellow dress reminds me of how fucking I loved that dress. And I got rid of it because I just feel like it, I'd moved beyond it. But when I went out in it, I didn't care that people would stare because it was, yeah, it was really bright and I felt like I was in La La Land. I felt fucking amazing in
it. Why did you get rid of it?
It's just not the right type of yellow anymore for me, I don't think. Yeah, yeah, but God, I loved it. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even notice people looking at me anymore because I'm so, I don't even know if they do actually.
Yeah.
I so don't give a shit because I'm not wearing what I'm wearing for anybody else.
No, that's it. It's for
attention or anything. I'm wearing it because I love the colour. It's fun. It makes me, it's a dopamine hit for me. I definitely, you know, dopamine dressing is a thing, you know.
Really?
Yeah, because obviously ADHD is, you know, have low dopamine or, you know, that's the whole point. That's the whole thing is that we have lower than normal levels of dopamine. So, so dopamine dressing is like, you know, just looking at, you know, your boots and they're like, you know, got
really?
Yeah.
Oh, like, that's so good to know.
Dopamine dressing. Yeah, it's quite funny. And I don't have dopamine dress. I feel completely different in something bright and clean and fun or just, you know, than I do in something dull. Because like I said, I definitely feel colour. Yeah. And so that's when I talk to clients and I see in my mind's eye what I want to, you know, what I know is going to make them look and feel fabulous. And then it's about me trying to communicate that to them.
Yeah.
And also them to kind of take on their part of what they want of that, you know, because some people won't be as open to colour. Some people won't be as open to, you know, different shapes. And so it's working with what that client desires for themselves, but also trying to get them to be brave and take on something that they might be a bit scared of, but they don't dislike. You know, it's about, you know, it's like, I love that, but I couldn't wear that. Yes, you can. Or, you know, I mentioned to you, you've got beautiful lips, you've got great lips. Mine are really thin. But you've got great lips. So you could wear like a beautiful, really intense kind of coral lipstick or something and completely change your whole face, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I love your wisdom and your skills. Yeah, it's amazing. Do you remember when we had, I can picture because it was here in my bedroom and where I brought up some stuff and you were like, it might be that you need some therapy on that because it was something deeper. You know, I love that you have the ability to say, I hear what's going on, and it might be that that's something to work on with someone else. Do you remember?
I do remember now you said that. Yeah.
Because I think...
Sorry.
Carry on.
No, you please.
I was just going to say, I think, like, and obviously I'm happy to be honest here, I think I wasn't comfortable taking up space and I had certain triggers and wounds over the way people had treated me and what they'd said to me. And so to be told that in such a lovely way and then to work on what we could together was so healing and so helpful.
Oh, I'm so pleased to hear that. I think for me, I've been working with someone to kind of work out a way of communicating who I am and what I do, which the communicating part is the part I find really hard. This is easy. Chatting, I can chat for England, and a really bad ADHD trait is talking over people because your brain's like already there working so fast. And so I'm really conscious and I'm trying not to do that, but I have noticed myself doing that a bit. Sorry about that.
Oh, God, I didn't think you have. No worries.
One of my massive things, and there's something that's really important, and I'll come to why. I mean, it's obviously pretty obvious, but is integrity. And like for me, it's really important to kindly say something like that because I invested in a coach between 21 and now, who was. I mean, I can't necessarily say they were a crook or whether they were doing it on purpose. I don't believe they took advantage of me on purpose. I just think they overinflated their abilities and they definitely weren't qualified. And I actually remember being in an absolute state and saying, maybe I need some, you know, need to see a doctor. Maybe I need to, you know, maybe I'm not okay. And she was like, no, no, you're fine. You just need to try harder kind of thing. You know, it was one of those. Yeah, it was one of those, you know, you can do whatever you want. You just need to believe in it. You know, yes, you can make 15 grand a month. You know, yes, you can. And at the time I was in an absolute state, wanted to earn a huge amount of money to get myself into a position where I was much more independent. And I wanted to, you know, there were things I felt I had to do at that time that were completely, I mean, completely ridiculous and completely but the problem is I didn't believe they were let me try again. One of the beautiful things about being ADHD is, or it may not be ADHD, it may just be me, is that I'm always I always see the positive. Like there's nothing I think the creative solutions, like I will always try everything I want to. Like I don't see like problems. I don't see problems. It's a good thing and a bad thing. And I always think I can do everything in 5 minutes as well, which is a problem. Like I have no idea of time, like time blindness. I have absolutely no concept of time. Even when I've done something before, I can't remember how long it took, or obviously something slightly different, you know, doing big things. But I think that gives me the ability to take chances and come up with creative solutions that other people wouldn't do. Mm. However, it does lead me into the path of being taken advantage of, potentially. Mm. And this happened in a major way. Mm. And, so she sort of said, no, no, you don't need to go to the doctor. You just need to work harder. You just need to keep working with me, you know, for the ridiculous amount of money I was paying her, that kind of thing, which, you know, I've worked on that. I've released that. It was, you know, whatever. But I think for me, because of those experiences, integrity is important to me anyway. It always has been. But because of those experiences, I think it's super important to declare your limitations when you're working with someone at such a deep level as well, because I think to say, you know, I want to help you with that, and I can help in this way in my modality, but actually I think you should, you know, speak to someone professional about that, because they could really help you, I think is really important, and something that I don't think people do enough, because they're trying to say prove to themselves or to their client that their solution is the solution, you know, that they're going to do everything for you, but actually they're not. You know, we all know that we might invest in one thing and then we need to do another thing and another thing. That's part of growth and life. Yeah. And I think, you know, being comfortable with saying, I'm not a therapist, you know, but I can recognize, having had a lot of therapy myself over the last 3 years, I can recognize when things would be useful to be worked on with someone that can hold that space for you. And I think, you know, when you're working with someone on such a deep level and such personal things, you know, I think, yeah, it's important that you can say those things if you're comfortable to say them.
Yeah, I love it. And I think one more thing I want to ask you in a moment is sort of what do you offer right now that you'd like to share with the world? I feel like just mentioning how I think for me, I know there's a sexy and a sassy side of me that comes out, not even when I'm with anyone else, you know, like I feel fucking great dancing alone in my flat without any alcohol, maybe not even in a dress, but you know, I've definitely had my fucking awesome solo parties, like in a heels and tassel dress.
Good for you.
Thanks. Yeah. I love it. But then I can imagine, like, if someone was to do my makeup, like, I trust you entirely with it. But, you know, if someone was to do my makeup and go smoke, like, maybe smoky eyes or, like, bold lips, I'd be like, I don't feel comfortable in it yet. So I know that there's a certain amount of, like, growing into that role, you know, and that's where the therapy comes in. That's where the growth comes in my experience. And it's been lovely to evolve and grow and heal in the ways that I have.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, the classic is we're never done. Like, you know,
totally.
I'm like, okay, when am I going to be done? I've given up. I've stopped saying that some time ago when I heard someone say, you know, that like healing is just eternal, you know, it's kind of, and so yeah, I'm much more easy on myself these days than I used to be, like when I first started sort of working out what was going on, and you know, don't be hard on yourself, like I mean, I wore a really bright lipstick the other day, I know it sounds so silly, in London, and my lips are quite thin on the top, and so I exaggerated them a little bit. And I loved it. It was great fun. But actually, when I was walking around the beauty halls in Selfridges and all the people were like, you know, looking at me like, can I help you? Can I help? I felt really self-conscious. I remember feeling really self-conscious about this. It was like it's Rainbow Spill by Elizabeth Eldridge. You should have a look. It's yeah, that's bizarre. I've forgotten her name. No. Anyway, it's so bright. It's like a bright, intense coral rainbow.
Wicked.
And I loved it, but yeah, I did feel really self-conscious. So there's this, I mean, wherever you are on whatever, you know, there's definitely, you know, it was judgment, that was what I was worried about. Have I done it? Are they gonna see that it's come off when I've had a drink, or you know, like, is it gonna just get too much mess, is it too bright? And that's for me, a makeup artist, you know, like it's amazing how easily intimidated and easily we can diminish ourselves when we feel like we're going to be judged or like
Totally. Yeah, so can you tell us what you'd like to share, what you're offering right now?
So I recently redeveloped my website, and I'm offering kind of three main things. One is called one is basically a makeup update, which is a 2-hour session with me, and we go through your makeup bag. We basically give you a makeup bag MOT and overhaul, see what's working for you, what isn't. And I come up with and design for you, work with you, a kind of quick and easy makeup routine that just gets you looking fresh and works for you. Because often what happens is people come to me, they've been doing it the same way since they were 16. Often people are using far more product than, not than they should, it's not the should, it's that more product than is actually going to be beneficial. Because once when you do a tiny bit, it can look amazing. If you use double that, it will start to look heavy and sit in lines and stuff like that. But you just, nobody teaches you this. Nobody tells you. You see it on YouTube and they're literally, you know, rubbing massive lines all over their face. So you think that's what they got to do. But anyway, and then I do it with you and you do it on yourself. And then you have me on WhatsApp to show me your practice and, you know, ask any tips and questions afterwards. That's a couple of hours with me. And then I do a makeup color and style, which is like the middle one, and that's everything I've talked about. But we also look at your best colors that suit you and light you up, based on your skin tone, hair and everything else, and your likes and dislikes and preferences. You know, I think that's super important. And the way I sort of approach that is not in a like rules way, oh, these, you know, can't wear yellow. I I'm like, fuck that, actually. If that's not on your chart and you love yellow, wear yellow. I don't even care if it makes you look green, wear it because it's fun and you like it, you know. There's no, like, I really am not, you know, I will give you the tools, but you have to allow yourself to like go outside of the rules, because it's just bullshit again, you know, just I think the way I approach it is in a really sort of untraditional kind of consultant, you know, image consultant way. I hate that term, and I can't have it anywhere written about me because it feels so fusty. Approach doing your colors, dear, in a much more kind of fresh way and an individual way. And then looking at your style identity, so kind of how you like to be put together, what you like to wear, what kind of style, vibe, feel that is, either is or you want to or you aspire to, because the two may be completely different, and it may take a little bit of sort of step change to get to that kind of style that you really maybe you felt in your, you know, you were more in your 20s like that, when you had the confidence, when you didn't have all the world pressing, you know, but, and so you'd like to get back to feeling like that more, but at the moment you're stuck in your kind of yeah, Jimmy Jams and like beige washed era like I was. So yeah, so that's the, yeah, that's the middle one, the kind of makeup, colour and style. So getting you looking at that. And then the third thing I do is called the Full Monty. And it's the whole, it's makeup, it's the colour, style, and then a full wardrobe edit where I come to your house, we look at everything you've got, we do like a keep, donate, sell, because, you know, lots of people have got high-end brands that, of course, you know, don't want to just give away, so we can work out, you know, selling those, and then get your wardrobe all completely organized and talk about different ways of putting things together and come up with some kind of outfits that are really easy for you to wear in the day, or outfits for evenings that you might, you know, events you might have. So I recently worked with a client who goes to a local school. She's at Windlesham House School, has kids at Windlesham House School, and they have big events that they go to, and she wanted, you know, some, she wanted to look and feel more sort of sophisticated and well put together, and but still very her, you know. So it was really important. She loves colour and pattern, so we got, you know, massive amounts of colour and pattern in each, in each outfit, but was really, you know, chic and how she wanted to appear. So very much her, but in a, in a style that felt like where she was now versus maybe where she's kind of been in the past. So that was really exciting, really fun. She loves it. She keeps checking in with me and saying, oh my god, I wore this today and I loved it, and people like were, you know, sort of complimenting me, and yeah, so it's really fun.
Absolutely. Like I say, life-changing. Fucking brilliant. Oh, that's so cool. Well, I think that's probably all I have to ask and all for now, but just thank you. So brilliant to talk to you, and thank you for sharing all you have.
Thank you.
And here is a poem I would love to share with you. Because poetry means a lot to me. I write poetry, I read it a lot, and I've chosen specific poems for each episode, so I hope you enjoy them. This is a poem by my beautiful friend Penny McKenzie, and it's called The Rules. Purple leaves her cold. It's not her colour because of her hair, having the tendency to clash, which might draw attention, most of it unwanted. She may wear blue or sometimes green, but never together. It is unseemly without a colour in between, or so she is told. Pink is also disallowed. It makes her skin look sallow, allegedly. A colour clamouring for grown-up status beyond the nursery walls. Mutton dressing as lamb? One hardly thinks so. Red will not be tolerated. The colour of blood and passion. It is therefore highly dangerous, particularly when paired with golden earrings, especially if they should dangle tantalisingly. Someone might mistake her for a gypsy. Orange is too bold and brash, reminiscent of places foreign and exotic. Not for her, then, she who is not allowed to emerge from under her bushel in case she should be noticed. These are the rules. Make no mistake. Her wardrobe proffers every conceivable shade of black. Very fitting for sombre occasions, mostly funerals where finally she'll get a chance to cut a dash. Thank you for listening to the Mums Fucking Matter podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love to hear from you. You can find me at The Birth Recovery Coach on social media, or contact me via my website. The link is in the show notes. In the meantime, if you'd like to know more about my coaching offering, hop onto my website and book a free discovery call. Sending you love and peaceful wishes. Until next time, look after you.